My name's Kate Law. I'm from Lyme Research UK and Ireland, a community group working collaboratively with TikTok Ireland. And our aim is to engage with research to improve policy and practice on tick-borne infections. My background is very multidisciplinary. I'm a social researcher and also a Lyme patient. And I work in a team of people whose expertise is very broad and multidisciplinary and ranges from epidemiology through to research and development and areas such as microbiology. So we're a truly multidisciplinary team. Our aim as a group is to review and at times collect evidence relating to the prevention, testing, diagnosis and treatment of Lyme disease and other TBIs in the UK and Ireland. And we want to link these issues to discussion of policy and practice in the UK and to provide information that's useful for individuals, campaigners, doctors and policy makers. We have three main projects. One is a survey of patients, which is currently being written up. The second is a review of tick protection and Lyme prevention measures locally. We have two articles on this topic. And thirdly, an extensive review of evidence on various areas stretching from prevention through to treatment, which is entered onto a rather large database that is shared virtually. I'm going to talk today about our online survey of Lyme patients and their experience of healthcare in the UK and AIR. The survey collected data from over 190 patients. In this data set that I'm going to present, it's 197. It was collected in the autumn of 2011 for 8 weeks and collected quantitative and qualitative information on a wide range of topics. It was primarily an online survey, but there were paper versions available, and it was advertised amongst Yahoo groups, Facebook and other discussion forums, including national and international networks for chronic illness of various kinds. It's based on a snowball technique which relies on word of mouth advertising of the survey, which is now a standard method in the social sciences and increasingly used in medical sciences as well, and generates descriptive and retrospective information. To explain further what the study is about, I would say that it measures the outcomes of NHS responses to the condition of Lyme disease on patients in terms of their experiences. In this sense, it's a form of evaluation that examines the impact of policy and practice within the NHS on groups of people, so problems around service delivery are revealed. This kind of approach would show issues that would not appear in other types of research and is becoming more common in health services research generally because of its ability to present problem-solving and critical research outcomes. I'm going to read a quote from a patient because it illustrates various things that you will be already thinking about, I would imagine, in relation to Lyme patients' experiences. "I was tested early and it came back negative. They spent the next 1.5 years trying to say I had multiple sclerosis until a consultant suggested retesting for Lyme. That test was positive. They should have realised tests came back negative if tested early in the infection because the body has not yet produced antibodies, so my treatment then was unnecessarily delayed. My opportunity for early treatment was missed and my disease became chronic." Now, there are lots of different things I can say about that quote, but the most important thing I think to say is that it illustrates that it's not just people who have long-standing chronic fatigue syndrome who test negative for Lyme disease that have difficulties with the NHS and the type of care that's available. I'm going to paint a picture of patients' experiences, people who are diagnosed with Lyme disease, in numbers. Firstly, looking at contextual issues around being exposed to ticks, when and where and how people were bitten. Moving on to diagnosis, the presentation of symptoms, who does the diagnosis, and a bit about testing. And finally, looking at some aspects of experience of healthcare. So firstly, contextual issues. Bear in mind that these patients in our study are people who have indicated that they were diagnosed with Lyme disease. Did they feel they were adequately informed about the risks of infections from ticks when they became ill? Clearly, the vast majority of people said that they weren't informed. So nearly 68% said they had no information at all. In a group of patients that have had Lyme disease, this is potentially not surprising, but very worrying, because if there are any national strategies for informing people about the risks from ticks and prevention methods, then clearly that's not working. Looking at gender differences, we can see that men are far more likely to feel fully informed than women. However, even in men, that's only just over 30%. So clearly there are some issues, and this information has implications for the way in which strategies for communicating risks about ticks are constructed, but also potentially other issues as well, such as the diagnostic process. What types of places were they in when they were exposed to ticks? Well, unsurprisingly, quite a lot of people were bitten in wild spaces, that is, traditional endemic areas such as forests and so on. However, if you look closely at the information, it also shows that there are considerable numbers of people who are exposed in non-endemic areas, and also considerable numbers of people who were exposed in multiple areas, so not just exposed in wild spaces but other spaces as well. So for example, we have people exposed in gardens, 17.3%, farmland, 18.5%, and campsites, leisure areas, 12.5%. What this suggests is that there's a significant number of people who are exposed in areas that are definitely not considered endemic and definitely not considered high-risk areas. I think the suggestion here is that we need to reevaluate two areas. One is strategies that only target high-risk groups undertaking high-risk activities in high-risk areas. Clearly that model doesn't really fit. And secondly, how this might impact on the way in which people are seen when they're assessed for Lyme disease in terms of risk assessment and their exposure to ticks. Around the time they became ill, were they being bitten by ticks regularly? There are distinctive gender differences. In general terms, all patients, the majority felt that they weren't being regularly bitten by ticks. There were nearly 55% of people said they weren't being, and only 22% said they were, with men far more likely to say that they were being bitten regularly. Again, this sort of information has implications for policy in terms of, again, prevention strategies and how they're constructed, but also, again, in terms of who gets assessed as being at risk of Lyme from ticks. As so few people are being bitten regularly, if a lot of points are given for regular, clear, known exposure to ticks, then perhaps this isn't, you know, an adequate way of targeting people and undertaking diagnostic processes. Do they remember the tick bite which caused their illness? Again, information that's not too dissimilar from published information for the UK. 40% didn't remember a tick bite and only 50% did. Again, it builds up a picture that a lot of people may not know that they've been bitten and therefore wouldn't be adequately tested in the right way at the right time, and that this, you know, has impacts on the way in which people are diagnosed. The gender differences are not significant, but men are slightly more likely to remember a tick bite in our data set. Are they being bitten regularly by ticks nowadays? This question was to try and get an impression of whether the people who have Lyme disease in our study are the kind of people who could be considered at ongoing risk from Lyme disease, and the vast majority said no, 77%. So again, this raises questions about whether there are very distinct high-risk groups or not, and therefore who should be considered to be having Lyme disease or not. The gender differences are statistically significant, with a higher proportion of men saying that they were being bitten regularly by ticks, which doesn't actually match with American research, which shows that more women feel that they're bitten regularly. Of those who are being bitten regularly, unsurprisingly, a lot of them, 64%, say that was because of outdoor pursuits. However, interestingly, nearly a third say they're exposed because of where they live. Another third, or nearly a third, say they're exposed due to pets or animals. And over, 45% say that they're exposed because of work, occupational exposure. So clearly, again, there are issues about multiple exposures across different areas, because these percentages do not add up to 100%. So multiple exposure is something that should be considered. And again, it has implications for prevention and risk assessment in diagnosis, because areas that aren't considered to be high risk, such as gardens, are not really being taken into account for designing prevention strategies, and so on. Who else in their community has a tick-borne infection? We would expect that people would know others who had Lyme disease in activity groups such as hill walking, and in fact that percentage is really quite low. Over 70% of the people in the study know somebody else with Lyme disease, and this could be obviously because people tell each other about the illness and then the snowball effect of people getting diagnosed. However, if you look carefully at how this is broken down, it's not as one would expect. So for example, quite a lot of people know others who are diagnosed through local friends and neighbours, or through their workplace, or family members. So not quite what we would expect, and the gender differences aren't great. Nothing particularly startling there, except that women seem to know people with Lyme disease who are family members more often than men. Looking at the diagnostic process, did they have a bullseye rash or other rash at the time of being bitten? The gender differences are not significant. In people overall, 45% have a distinctly circular rash, and another 16.7% have a rash that's not circular. So here we have 26.6% who did not have a rash. So clearly those people were at risk of not being diagnosed without that classic sign or symptom. Did they show this rash to their GP or doctor? Because if you have one but you don't mention it or show it, then it's not much use diagnostically. But this data suggests that the vast majority, nearly 70% of people, did show or mention a rash or tick bite to their doctor. Very small-ish proportion haven't done that, and that's only 24%. So there aren't any startling reasons for delayed diagnosis. Were they positive for Lyme disease on an NHS test at any point? The gender differences here are statistically significant. In people overall, we've got 36% who test positive, and then 40% who test negative. So not too dissimilar proportion of people in those two groups. But surprisingly, there are 20% of the data set who weren't tested at all on the NHS, which is surprising in the circumstances. Men are far more likely to have a positive test, and women are far more likely to have a negative test, which is a startling difference. This is a quote from a very recent article which looks at some of the issues around testing in a very large retrospective study, which says both false negative and false positive serological tests do occur. And I put that in just as a reminder that in actual fact the testing, the actual outcomes of the testing itself are, as a distinct test itself, is not entirely reliable. But there is a lot of other social processes that go on around testing that do or don't ensure that someone becomes diagnosed. So remember, diagnostic processes are a human process, not strictly speaking just a biological one. From whom did you get your initial diagnosis of Lyme? The gender differences are significant. In people in general, 24% are diagnosed by a GP, another 15% by a consultant, and 40% are diagnosed by a private doctor. So roughly equal proportions are diagnosed by the NHS and by private doctors. But if you look at men, for example, they're more likely to be diagnosed by a GP, and women are far more likely to be diagnosed by a private doctor. This is another quote from a patient, which I'm not going to read out, but just to say that it, you can read it in the notes, it illustrates that even when patients present really clear signs, such as a rash, they often have difficulties in the way they're treated in the NHS, and this seems to be, in many cases, a sort of disbelief system that's in operation to the detriment of patients. But what exactly is their experience of care? Did they feel their GP was informed about tics when they became ill? Gender differences not significant. Nearly a third said they were fully informed. Another 17% partially informed. But the vast majority, 66%, said that they weren't. So clearly, people who get Lyme disease and become diagnosed with it are not overly confident in their GP's knowledge. Did they feel that their main consultant was equipped to deal with their health problems? Again, large majority of people, 63%, weren't confident in their main consultant, and gender differences were significant. So we've got a higher proportion of men feeling that their consultant was fully or partially equipped, and a much higher proportion of women who didn't have confidence in their main consultant. So what's the impact of all of this on patients? That's measured in various different ways in my survey. However, I've just picked out one indicator, which is about how patients felt about delayed treatment if they experienced it. Quickly, you can see that not very many people said that they weren't or hadn't experienced a delay, so that was only 13% said that. Of the rest, a very high proportion, 60%, felt that their delays were due to misdiagnosis. Another 44% felt delays were due to not knowing about Lyme and not knowing the symptoms. 40% felt that their symptoms were ignored. And in other areas too, there seemed to be difficulties. Many of them, one in five, didn't receive timely testing. One in four was referred to the wrong specialist, and one in four had negative test results initially, which influenced the diagnostic process. Looking at gender differences, something leaps out of the page, which is that whilst there's a common experience between men and women, which is very important. There's obviously quite a lot of variation within the group of men and the group of women. There are also some differences, with women much more often feeling that they've been misdiagnosed, that they didn't know about Lyme or recognise the signs, that their symptoms were ignored, that they were referred to the wrong specialist, and that they had complex symptoms that weren't classic. So there is something there to think about, I think, in relation to how women are treated in the NHS and how people in general are treated in the NHS. Summarising the similarities between men and women, they're similar in that they, in the extent to which they remember a tick bite, in terms of whether they have a rash at the time of the bite, whether they mentioned this to a doctor, and how they felt about whether their GP was informed. The differences are that women, compared to men, are more likely to get a negative test on the NHS, get a diagnosis from a private doctor, or to feel that their main consultant was not equipped. Bear in mind that all of that happens against the backdrop of a large degree of similarity between men and women. People, they share a lot, you know, so the differences are marginal, and it just reflects a proportion of women, but not every single one. So there's obviously going to be quite a lot of variation in the experience of men and women within the context of NHS and other care. Finally, I'm going to finish with a quote from a patient. "None of the dozens of doctors I saw on the NHS or privately ever mentioned testing for Lyme disease. I was describing textbook classic Lyme disease symptoms to them all. I have seen literally dozens of doctors. I wonder how ashamed they should feel to learn I was diagnosed after 24 years by another patient. Sadly, my chances of full recovery at this late stage are very slim." I put that in just because I think that the NHS and the government agencies that interact with the policy making within our country and other countries are often introverted. They're focused on their own need, their own needs, not the needs of patients. They're inward looking, they're introspective, and often they lose sight of the fact that the point of NHS care is not to employ them or to ensure a system is preserved or a policy is preserved, but it is actually for patients. And if the outcomes for patients are poor, then there is a problem that needs to be fixed. So I wanted to finish on that note and also say, have we been here before?